Podcast 12.25. This is a bit of a special edition, a little bit shorter, just talking about the Texas Southern game and LSU upcoming. Yes, we're previewing a game like we're somehow savants. That's how it works. Welcome to a special edition of the MGO podcast in between Michigan's first and second round games of the 2021 NCAA tournament. Seth went to the game and he destroyed his voice cheering at a 1 versus 16 game. So we've all been a little cooped up, but I'm Brian Cook.
Hey, that's IMBase amateur. And Seth, that is passion. So, I laudable, I would say. Laudable.
I mean, I might have yelled a couple of times like at various calls that I thought were slightly absurd.
Yeah, I was about to say mostly at the refs, but in the second half of that game. But you know, that's a reason to yell. That's a reason to blow your voice out.
Speaking of reasons to yell, thanks to Underground Printing for making this all possible. Check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear at their 3 store locations in Ann Arbor, or learn about their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. We'd also like to thank our associate sponsors, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the residents in Ann Arbor downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, and HomeSure Lending, who is once again sponsoring all of Michigan of MGO Blog's tournament coverage this year. Also, if you notice an improvement in sound quality, that's because we're recording this on SignalWire, which is a full remote office platform that uses a much better codecs. Sign up at signalwire.com before April 30th and use the code MUPPETS, and SignalWire will buy lunch for your first team meeting. All right, so Michigan gets a win over Texas Southern in a very frustrating game, I would say, at least a frustrating second half, where Texas Southern actually outscores Michigan by 2, and Michigan has Hunter Dickinson foul out in 24 minutes. Austin Davis picks up 4 fouls in 10 minutes himself. The Tigers get 22 free throws, and I'm just, you know, some of these instances were just kind of like, come on, man.
There was a lot of like, oh, man, like the refs feel bad that the big kids are really just pushing the small kids around here. Kind of a vibe for a lot of that second half. But I mean, I wrote in the recap that this felt a lot like just like an early season non-conference game, except with a bunch of March Madness logos slapped all over the court. Because, I mean, Juwan Howard was really able to spend a lot of this game just, you know, toying around with different lineup combinations. You get extended appearances from both Zeb Jackson in the first half, which was a little bit of a surprise, in which he drains a couple of threes, which is also a little bit of a surprise given how he shot this year. And then Terrence Williams playing a decent amount. And, I mean, a lot of tinkering to the point that those guys end up playing as much or more than Austin Davis, who really only gets a minute in the first half and then plays in the second half, mostly because I think Dickinson was in foul trouble. But I don't know from this game how much of it was Juwan Howard experimenting while he still had the luxury, and how much of it was kind of getting the rotation set for the rest of the tournament. I mean, it's tough to tell, and we've never seen Juwan Howard coach in a tournament setting before, so I'm going to throw my hands up here.
Well, I mean, so Zeb gets 8 minutes, and Mike Smith gets 37, Eli Brooks gets 35. So Sean D. Brown did not get any minutes at the 1 or the 2. Obviously, he doesn't play the 1, but you know, they've played him at the 2 frequently. So he was just a front court sub. So if they're prepping for Zeb Jackson to get 10 minutes a game, that I mean, he hit a couple of threes. He airballed another one. Those are the first 2 makes he's had from 3 this year. So I mean, it's good to see him get those down, but you'd like to see him, I guess, operate a little bit more as a point guard. He has no assists in this game, no turnovers, but he is 6'5". He is an athlete, so you feel like as long as he's giving you a little something on offense, maybe he's playable for that amount of time.
Yeah, and he's especially if he's going to mostly be playing as the nominal two guard with either Smith or Brooks on the floor. And I don't think we're going to see a moment, you know, at least a meaningful moment in this tournament where both Smith and Brooks are on the bench. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, the lack of playmaking from him, you know, might be something that we look at when we start projecting for next year. But, you know, given his role right now, you just want that guy having some confidence in his shot. And clearly he does not lack confidence. So, I mean, you know, whether they go in or not, we'll see. But, you know, it was nice to see him hit one off the dribble and also one off the catch. So you got a little variety there. And then and he does look like, you know, I didn't see any real noticeable breakdowns on defense with him or anything. So, you know, if he's able to keep afloat on that end, then getting him out there for a few minutes a game might, you know, at least save the guards from, you know, playing the full 40.
Yeah. And then in terms of offense, very spread out for Michigan. Mike Smith gets 18, Hunter Dickinson 16, Eli Brooks and Brandon Johns both have 11, Wagner 9, Austin Davis 7. So this wasn't a game where anybody had a particularly huge role in the offense, which is fine. It's just you're looking at, I mean, the thing that kind of bugged me about this game, especially going forward into the LSU game, is that Michael Weathers, the star guard for the Tigers, gets up 24 points on 37% usage. And it turns the ball over four times. He has one assist, so his O rating isn't great, but he goes 8 of 17 from 2 and gets the line 8 times. So Michigan is about to go up, and a guy in Cam Thomas who has a pretty similar game, except he's a mid-round NBA first round pick instead of a guy in the SWAC.
Yeah, I mean, I think the encouraging part I can take out of this is that they totally shut down his playmaking and still were able to contest his shot. I mean,
some of the time
they were just getting blown by, but that is going to happen if you go five out against a guy. I mean, you know, it's really hard to get just lock a guy down in isolation. That's something Shaundi Brown is really good at, but it's just tough.
I don't know, man, because Brown is the guy who got roasted two or three times by Weathers, and this is something that, you know, we've mentioned a couple times. In the first half, he picks up...
Brown had given up one isolation bucket in the entire season until this point.
I don't...
On 16 possessions.
I mean, sure, that's the synergy numbers, but we've seen him kind of get up on guys way outside where he should be and getting blown by multiple times. So I don't know if that's like
usually when he's screened.
All right. Well,
there's almost always a pick involved in those.
Well,
plays.
So he picks up two fouls in the first half, like 70 feet from the bucket. And
yeah, that wasn't ideal.
And he's up on Weathers, and Weathers can't shoot, right? So why are we up that close to that guy? And I just feel like this has been kind of a pattern for him where he gets too aggressive on the perimeter and someone gets the bucket on him who has no business really getting the bucket on him because he's just not cognizant of the fact that, you know, a contested three from a lot of people is not a good idea. Now, if he's going up against Javonte Smart from LSU, yeah, sure, go ahead. But the situational awareness of some of this is kind of like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that for a lot of this in this game, you can explain it by... I don't think Juwan Howard was really game planning for Texas Southern.
Sure.
Like, I mean, you go into this game and go, okay, what do we need to do to get ready for the second round while not, you know, playing around too much to put this game in question? Which is why you get at least two different lineup combinations that haven't played together all season, literally. I was checking this during the game on Hooplens because I was fascinated by some of the weird combos out there and just curious. And I mean, with Shaundi Brown, it's how he plays defense for the most part. And I think, you know, they probably just didn't do that many opponent specific tweaks to this game because they used it more as they would a non-conference game in November than a normal first round tournament game, which you can do when you're a one seed playing a 16 seed and you're not Virginia and slowing the pace to the point where you can, shoot yourself into a loss.
Yeah. So Michigan has 8 turnovers from Dickinson and Davis, 0 assists. The rest of the team, 19 assists and 6 turnovers. So Smith, Brooks, and Wagner all had 5 or more assists and just a couple turnovers or fewer. And then Terrence Williams misses a couple threes, comes in, but also has a pretty interesting high-low possession with Hunter Dickinson, where they kind of look like Minnesota last year with Oturu and Jordan Murphy. So, like, Terrence Williams is able to get in that elbow area, and then he's very good at entering the ball to Dickinson. And I feel like if he's going to be on the court, that's where he should be. He should be in the high post and not at the three-point line.
Yeah, because it's not like they're guarding him out there anyway. Right. So you might as well move him in a little bit closer, because when he's spotting up at this point, you know, he's either taking and not making a three on a, which is pretty rare in terms of him jacking it up at least, or he's just kind of driving very hard into a lot of players, which sometimes works out. I mean, he's pretty good at drawing contact, and he did have an interesting throw up an air ball, get his own miss, and put it back and get foul possession in there too.
Yeah.
But you did pull out, I think, the main thing with him, which is, I mean, he was AAU teammates with Hunter Dickinson. This was something that popped up earlier in the season too. They have really good high-low post chemistry. So they have a good feel for where they're going to be. I've got multiple GIFs of each player assisting the other. And you can really tell those guys just have a good feel for where they're going to be on the court. So if Williams is going to be out there, yeah, I'd like to see him. First of all, I'd like to see his minutes tied to Dickinson's, and then hopefully see Michigan running a fair amount of, you know, horn stuff that goes into high low, stuff that isn't so much the five out or one in four out spread pick and roll stuff, where teams can just kind of sink off Williams and totally clog up the various options that you have off of the initial action, which is what like Ohio State was able to do against him when he was out there. But hopefully now that he's played more and Howard has a better handle of the lineup combinations, he can pick and choose these minutes a little bit more.
So Wagner and Brandon Johns kind of had similar games statistically, except for Johns getting to the free throw line quite a bit. And one thing that, I mean, kind of rankled a little bit is I thought both of those guys had multiple opportunities to take open catch and shoot threes, and they turned them down. And, you know, you want to do that sometimes just so you can attack closeouts and maybe get some easier buckets. But, you know, sort of too frequently, those drives weren't resulting in even a shot. They would be just a failed action and then you would reset. And I feel like given the way these guys have shot for their career, especially lately for Wagner, like those are shots that need to go up.
Yeah, especially since with Brandon Johns, you've got to establish a certain level of just willingness to fire to get defenses to respect you. And at this point, you know, Texas Southern was sagging off of him. And, you know, he finally fired up a three after, you know, shortly after getting a steal on the defensive end. And that made them play more honest on him. And also opened up chances to draw those fouls attacking closeouts. With Wagner, I mean, first of all, to finish my point on Johns, I think he was very focused on trying to get the ball into Dickinson to the point that seemed like a coaching point. Mm-hmm. Option one is let's try to get the ball into the post. So if he's passing up those shots early in the clock where they're trying to get a post touch and then working the ball around, I don't mind it as much. If that is happening in the last 10 to 15 seconds of the shot clock, that's when I get a little more concerned. And that's where I think some of Wagner's, like, even when he puts the ball up, sometimes he'll have a little hitch before he does it. And I just think he's thinking a little bit too much before some of these three-point attempts or turning down some of these three-point attempts. And I certainly don't want to complain too much when he also dishes out 6 assists and only turns the ball over twice in a game where, you know, his secondary playmaking was a big role in the offense performing pretty well and all the other starters finished in double digits. But yeah, there are shots where it's like, man, if you just fired that up a second earlier instead of waiting and then firing it up, I think that might have actually gone in. And I'm sure that also plays into some of his hesitation and then not taking shots. And at this point, I'm not sure we're going to see him work that out of his game in the course of a tournament, but maybe he hits a couple and starts gaining confidence and just starts letting him fly. We'll see.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and preview LSU.
LSU 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Up,
take so raw it could be Tomino's face in the first 4 day!
This was the one specific instance where it's okay to root for Oral Roberts. I am not explaining myself.
I can think of one more instance, but just one.
Fair.
My hot take is Michigan State didn't make the tournament.
That's not even hot. It's called a play-in
game. It's called a play-in game.
They lost the play-in.
Take it down. You got your 22 straight. You didn't do it. You didn't do it.
And then CBS is like putting up the graphic that shows it during like other games that don't even involve Tom Izzo.
You didn't.
And it's like, man, they didn't do
you
it.
You didn't do it.
Throw up an asterisk at least.
You didn't do it. You yutz. All right.
Put Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame and take State out of the tournament.
If you'd like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, check out Raw Power for iOS and Mac. It's an advanced photo editor and manager, and Raw Power is written by a Michigan alum. It's great with RAWs and JPEGs, works with your Apple library, and adds editing features no other app has. Check it out at rawpower.app. Will Wade's LSU Tigers are next up. They have the number 5 offense in the country and the 123 defense. So, sort of like Iowa, but also not like Iowa.
Yeah, also not at all like Iowa, but
the end results are a lot like Iowa. How you get there is completely different. So this is possibly the most ISO heavy team in the country. You go on to hoopmath.com and you look at their big three guys, Cameron Thomas, Trenton Watford, and Javonte Smart, and approximately 20% of their shots inside the arc collectively are assisted. And then Smart in particular, half of his threes are unassisted. Something like a quarter of Thomas's threes are unassisted. This is a team that just gives the ball to guys and then has them go one-on-one, and whatever the results are, the results are. And Thomas is a really interesting guy because you look at his statistical profile, and he's a great athlete. He's got incredible athleticism. He's a good shooter in the mid-range, but only 15% of his shots are at the rim, which is like Dimitri Trice territory. So he's, you know, he's a 30% usage guy with a turnover rate under 10. So that's a really unusual combination, and that's because he doesn't pass the ball to assist very frequently. He's got an assist rate under 10 as well, but he gets the line a bunch, and he's an 88% shooter at the line from the floor, 47-32. So that's not super efficient, but when you don't turn the ball over a bunch and you get to the line a bunch, that'll be a high efficiency, high usage player, even though like the amount of offense they run for him is nil.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys who just can grind out possessions for you. I mean, you kind of think of like for Michigan fans, if late clock Isaiah Livers just existed all the time in an offense. It sort of looks like that, where not everything is getting particularly close to the basket, but he's finding a way to get shots up. And to complete your point on LSU being very isolation heavy, they are in fact the third most isolation heavy team in the entire country, according to Synergy, over 10% of their possessions, which is bonkers because that pulls out passes out of isolations to spot ups. So that's just a crazy, crazy amount of the time where you're going one-on-one. But yeah, I mean,
it feels like way more than that when you actually watch them. But like dribble handoffs and stuff, and like pick and roll stuff where screens get rejected, doesn't count as isolation, right? So there's,
yeah, they're running enough stuff where it's like, you know, you're setting like a just enough of a screen that it's going to get counted as something other than isolation.
Right.
But the play functionally feels like
so.
Isolation.
So Thomas has a ton of possessions that get classified as pick and roll ball handler. And like, yeah, there's a screen in there somewhere.
But they're certainly not like they don't hit the roll man often at all.
No.
Like, and that's kind of where you can tell that like these are screens that like, you know, if they're being set strongly, they're being set in order to try to get a switch. So this is still more isolation than pick and roll, because they almost operate like an NBA team in terms of this is a team that's hunting matchups and then just attacking with one-on-one play. I shouldn't reduce the NBA like that, but it's it fits a certain stereotype of NBA.
Well, there's and that is something that you have to do more frequently when you have a 24-second shot clock. So it's
yes,
it's not all of the NBA, but it is something that is more prominent in the NBA than in college.
Yeah, and matchup hunting, which is something Juwan Howard has brought to Michigan, is a very common NBA thing. But I am relatively optimistic about Michigan being able to defend these guys, just because they have a sort of stretch big, but he's not very efficient at hitting threes, and he doesn't take too many of them. They have size in the backcourt, but they don't have a ton of size up front, and they just shove so much of their production into four players.
Yeah, and so also they don't have a bench. They barely have a fifth starter.
Yeah, this is a team that is 279th in bench minutes, and KenPom doesn't do bench scoring, but they'd be way, way lower than that. They just, everything is Cam Thomas, Trendon Watford, Javonte Smart, and Darius Days.
Yeah.
And I think Days is going to be probably the most interesting matchup on the court for Michigan. Brandon Johns is probably going to be the guy on him for a lot of the game, but he is this unusual 6'7", 245-pound, really efficient stretch four.
Yes.
Who also is their best. I mean, he puts up their most center-like numbers in terms of rebounding and finishing around the basket. But he's also a 40% three-point shooter. He's just an unusual player.
Yeah, so if there's one guy I could take from this team and put him on Michigan, it's not Cam Thomas, it's this guy. Just
yeah, in terms of fit and also replacing Livers, that'd be really nice. But yeah, he's definitely a player that I end up zeroing in on when I watch them over the last couple weeks, just because he's fun. The other thing with these guys is, other than Smart and to a lesser extent Watford, they are just black holes. like pretty much everyone on this offense is entirely like driving to shoot.
They are 338th in assist percentage.
Yeah, I mean, Smart leads the team in assists per game at 3.9. Watford averages 3, and nobody else is above 1.5.
Right.
They are, I mean, we've said a number of times that this is just a team that can go one-on-one all day, and that's pretty much what they do. But every time you start poking around to look for other things about them, that part of their game just keeps jumping out. So
yeah, so let's talk about Wofford. He's 6'9", he's 240, so there's going to be a major size advantage for Dickinson. Also, he's a center, but he's really a four. He averages 2.8 fouls per 40, which is probably too low for a center. He's not a rim protector at all, and he is a guy who maintains a level of efficiency as a guy with the ball in his hands. But if you want to go back to a major reason that this defense is in triple digits, it's the fact that Trendon Watford is their center, and he's their only center. So they had Sharif O'Neal, but he hasn't played since a long time. He hasn't played in 20 games or something. So he was their backup big, and now their backup big is Days, or another 6'7 guy named Josh LeBlanc, who has no usage. He's one of those guys who only scores if he's getting set up on an assist or gets a putback. So they depend a lot on Watford, and he's going to be out there for 35 minutes. So he's going to be getting worked. Like, Michigan is going to go in the post against Watford and tire him out. And I think, LSU is going to have to double. So one thing that Michigan can't have is they can't have their post turned over 8 times.
Yeah, Dickinson, I mean, there are 2 major keys for him in this game. One is to take care of the ball, because LSU is going to have to be aggressive on him. And the other is that Thomas and Watford are both very good at drawing fouls. And while Dickinson has generally been quite good at avoiding fouls, we have seen him, especially on the defensive end, We have seen him pick up some cheap ones on the offensive
end.
Well,
if they're gonna give him those fouls for completely legal screens, I don't know what to do, right?
I was gonna say beyond the Texas Southern game, specifically to avoid the fact that a lot of those whistles were absolute BS yesterday. But getting hopefully he will not get hit with a foul for screening a guy too well, because that foul should have gone on the Texas Southern guy's teammate for not calling that screen out. He just ran into a stationary guy very hard. These are guys who are going one-on-one, flinging themselves at the basket. Watford does have, that inside-outside game where he can go at Dickinson off the dribble, which is a little worrisome in terms of, maybe picking up a foul or two, just, trying to handle a stretch big who is skilled in a way that even in the Big Ten you don't necessarily see a ton, just because he can put the ball on the deck. Dickinson staying out of foul trouble is going to be big. But even if he has to sit for a little bit, I think Michigan can work it inside with Austin Davis and Brandon Johns against these guys, just because they are so singularly focused on having to stay on the court because of LSU's depth, that at some point they are just going to concede some post buckets if you get a certain level of position on them. And I think both Brandon Johns and Austin Davis are capable. So that might be a way to offset some Dickinson issues.
And then the final major player for LSU is Javonte Smart, who was infamously the subject of a strong-ass offer that the FBI taped.
That's right.
And that was a strong-ass offer. That was a good offer to make, because this is a guy shooting 51-42 from the floor, and more than half of his threes are not assisted. So that this is a guy who, even if they're in a bad situation, in a late-clock situation, he just wants to pull up, that's a good shot for them. Not a great shot, but he's a guy who's a very, very dangerous three-point shooter, along with Days. So it makes it difficult to help off those two guys.
Yeah, he's their kind of primary end of clock guy, probably their most effective half court player, and also a very good player in transition because of his passing acumen. He does have a little bit of an elevated turnover rate, but on this team and the way it functions, I get it. He's the only one who's passing. So when you have to kind of be the shot creator when it's not iso ball time, I don't know if that's really on him. So he's skilled. He's 6'4", 205. So I mean the big fear in this game for Michigan is that with two kind of bulky 6'4 guys comprising the backcourt for LSU, can Mike Smith and Eli Brooks be effective defensively without needing too much help?
Right.
And that's going to be a test. I think this might be a game where Michigan just ends up kind of having to turn it on offensively to offset not a classic defensive performance for them. At the same time, I think the help that they may be able to provide off of LSU basically playing at least one guy out there all the time who almost never shoots not always having shooters out there, hopefully Michigan can clog the paint a little bit, provide some help. They have, athletic help guys or big help guys between Dickinson and Johns and Sean D. Brown and Franz Wagner. So I think they're built well in the front court to shut LSU down. And the question is going to be, can the backcourt guys do a decent enough job of at least keeping these dudes in front of them you're not over-rotating to the point that LSU is getting open looks down low?
Yeah, so the rest of LSU consists of a bunch of guys who either never shoot the ball or are hideously inefficient. So they've got a freshman point guard called Eric Gaines, who's out there for about 40% of their minutes, and I'm hoping that what Michigan does is they match Mike Smith minutes to this guy, because he's shooting 25-18 from the floor with a 30 turnover rate.
Yeah.
So... like, if we're concerned about Smith getting shot over, that's, 16 minutes where you don't really have to worry about it.
And that is their main backup guard. That dude has been getting about 40% of their minutes over the last 5 games.
Yeah, and so then they have a couple of wing types, Andre Hyatt and Wani Wilkinson. Maybe it's just Wani. I don't know. who don't really do a lot offensively. And kind of the key theme with everybody other than the big four is that they're not really shooters. They've got a guy who's getting 4 minutes a game who is 7 of 16 from three, but the other guys are not shooters and can be doubled off of. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's amazing that we have gone this far. Just mentioned Mwani Wilkinson, and the dude is literally number one in O rating and KenPom in the entire country,
yes.
And we do not care because he takes 7% of the team's shots when he's on the floor.
Right, and if you go to Hoop Math, literally all of those are either assisted dunks or putbacks. So
yes, he is a pure garbage
yes.
man.
so.
But for such a numbers focused outlet, it's amazing that we just had like totally aligned that this dude has a 146 over.
Yeah, and so one thing about LSU is their defense is 123rd in the country, and it looks like for all the world that they're the luckiest team in the country when it comes to threes. So
yes,
Will Wade has been at LSU for 4 years. In that time, they've given their number 268. 231, 290, and 327 in the number of threes they allow on defense. So for 4 years, they have just allowed buckets and buckets of threes. The previous, so they're, in terms of how many of those threes go down there, they've been 193rd, 134th, 252nd, and this year they're 14th. So so every Will Wade team gives up absolute butt tons of three-pointers, and the previous three teams have not shown any predilection for like, okay, this is a zone. This is something special about this particular defense that prevents threes from going down, which you do see in teams that block a lot of shots because, you know, you get dissuaded from shooting twos and your shot selection on threes gets worse, right? But this is a team that doesn't block any shots, right? They don't block anything. So what is the mechanism for LSU to be giving up this many threes and being 14th in the country and the number of threes that go down? I don't think there is one.
Yeah, it's hard to look at them and point to anything specifically that they're doing.
Well, one thing, and that is that the SEC collectively is hitting threes at a 33% rate, which is 22nd among 32 conferences.
That is worth noting. Yeah, SEC, not the most skilled basketball conference in the world. And I mean, when we're talking about how these numbers may have been affected, more of their schedule this year was comprised of SEC games than ever before. So, you know, that may have played a factor in their opponents hitting less than 30% from three for the season. So yeah, this is not something that I'm concerned about for Michigan in terms of getting offense on LSU. They should be able to, you know, especially with the threat of Dickinson down low and the amount of attention he's going to get. I can't imagine that LSU isn't going to send extra guys his way, and I can't imagine that isn't going to open up shots on the perimeter. So as long as Michigan is making a reasonable number of their open threes, which their guys have been doing lately on catch-and-shoot stuff, then, I think LSU is going to need Michigan to have kind of a funky shooting game for them to pull off an upset. So, I mean, the good news for Michigan in terms of, you know, being able to take advantage of all this attention that Dickinson's going to get is that they are coming off a game where they shot reasonably well from three. And while they are moving to kind of these scary confines of a football stadium where shooting backdrops can be worrisome and all that, and teams are generally not used to playing there, Michigan did at least just play the Big Ten tournament in Lucas Oil. So, they have experience with that shooting backdrop and court in a way that other teams aren't going to have. So hopefully that offsets, because the main way I see LSU pulling off an upset is getting pretty lucky with the way the three-pointers break in this game.
Yeah, and they've been having that all season. We'll see if that continues. The thing that kind of bothers you about going up against this LSU team is that they are fairly opponent invariant. So Cam Thomas is going to take a lot of mid-range twos that are good, but no, they're okay shots. They're like decent looks for him because he's like a 41% shooter, even though a lot of those looks are extremely difficult. And, you know, it doesn't really matter who's going to be checking him. You know, we could talk about like, okay, we should put Shondi Brown on this guy instead of Eli Brooks, but, you know, Shondi Brown's just going to be slightly closer to a closeout that's not really going to affect Cam Thomas very much. So his shots are pretty opponent invariant. And Javonte Smart, I mean, obviously half of his threes are unassisted. So these are guys who could get hot and, you know, have been hot for much of the year, and they have a very good offense. But, you know, if Michigan's able to just cram it down their throats, the other thing that kind of jumps out from their statistical profile is that they're 320th at defensive rebounding. And they don't.
Yeah, and with Brandon Johns playing more, that becomes especially interesting because Michigan is a much more offensive rebounding inclined team when Johns is on the court.
Yeah, they do get after the offensive boards though. So that's like, I think shot volume is going to be really important in this game because, you know, these teams have fairly similar statistical profiles in terms of turnovers and defensive rebounding, but the big kind of red flag for LSU is cleaning up their own boards. And then the other thing is how the whistle goes, because if it's similar to the Texas Southern game, Michigan's going to be in trouble because Thomas and Javonte Smart doesn't really get the line very much, but Thomas gets the line a bunch and he's an 88% shooter there. So, you know,
although if it goes if they call that both ways, then, LSU has nobody to play and Michigan is a great free throw shooting team.
Yeah.
So as long as it's even, then I'm okay with, I'd prefer them to just let them play, always. It's a good point to bring up about how LSU is pretty opponent invariant, because this is a team that, is capable of putting up 78 points on 78 possessions at a 13-point loss to Georgia, and then less than a month later scores 79 on 69 possessions against Alabama's top five defense. It's just, I think, you know, you can kind of expect LSU to plug along at like a somewhere between a 1 point per possession and like 1.1 clip. And with Michigan, it's a matter of edging past that. And I think with LSU's pretty breakable defense, let's say, I think there's a pretty good chance of that. But it does, I was certainly rooting for St. Bonaventure to pull the upset just because LSU has the type of NBA talent that sometimes just can pull out, tight games with the type of tough shot making that you normally see in the league.
Yeah, and it's a situation where you feel like we should beat this team, but there's a pretty easy script for like how it goes wrong, and that's, you know, LSU keeps their weird 3-point juju going, and their NBA type guys hit a bunch of contested shots.
On the plus side, if it comes down to a matter of who schemes up the best stuff, feeling pretty good.
I was watching the St. Bonaventure game, and the color commentator said that like Will Wade had a lot of sets to go to, and I was just like, "Come on, man!"
It prompted a good tweet about all the different ISOs he can run.
Come on, man. Let's not pretend this guy isn't like a bag man with legs. I guess bagmen have legs. He's just a McDonald's bag with legs. Wrong school, right conference. Ugh. Well, yeah.
I'm kind of impressed we made it this. Well, never mind. The damn good offer came up.
Yeah.
A damn strong offer. LSU deserves their rep, and I hope Michigan beats them. And not really about the cheating stuff, because cheating is whatever, but the fact that they're just so bad
at it. So brazen about it. And I don't think that that's a coincidence that they're so brazen about this kind of stuff, and then they're so brazen about some much more serious things at their university. I don't think it's hard to draw a line between those two things. But anyway, Michigan versus LSU Monday, 7 p.m. Be there, or be on TV. You're probably going to be on TV.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and a silent Seth Fisher, who is still producing. So thank you, Seth, for blowing out your voice and still coming to work today.
Listen, guys, I had like a whole year's worth of rooting pent up.